Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
It is up, everybody. Welcome to Comic Book Club. Can you hear that in the background?
We can hear you.
Oh, great. This is going great already.
Say your name.
Oh, boy. All right. We're going to do that later. Here, we're gonna start this over again.
Oh, wow. We're really starting?
Jeez, that's never happened.
That has never happened, but already a tech disaster. Okay, 3, 2.
Come on, Comic Book Club.
Now I gotta leave that part in. Jeez. What's up, everybody? I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live, I guess, from a couple of places on the internet. Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter/X. We were trying to be live on Instagram, but clearly some kinks gotta be worked out there.
We're trying it. Yeah. Technology doesn't, it's not like Ben Franklin put one key in the air and all of a sudden electricity, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's not like Oliver Newton get hit with an apple.
It's Olivia Newton.
Olivia Newton.
And that made her dance.
Mm-hmm. A flash dance, if you will.
Oh, that, wait exactly. A second. What is happening?
That's how we discovered grease lightning, which was the first lightning.
Yes. So beyond that, beyond that fun little tech mishap, I will just say up front, 5 to 10 minutes before the show, I was setting up my tech and a little piece of my mic fried out. No, this is important. I feel strongly about our mic quality. No. Also, you're going to hear when I'm like tap on the computer.
Yeah, don't do that.
You know, this is an audio podcast later, so the audio is important.
And a lot of people listen just for the audio fidelity conversation.
Yeah. People really like it when you talk again.
I love to hear just how the sausage is not quite made.
Yeah, I love it. And Justin, also, you're not using your mic for inexplicable reasons, so it's all good. Cool. Okay, why don't we get into it? Once a month, we pay tribute to all of our fine Patreon supporters by thanking them, but only certain ones of them. We only thank people for the $5 and up level. Below that, honestly, like, who cares, I got to say, right? Right, what? Guys? Pete?
That's the spirit.
Come on, man.
Oh, there we go. Obviously, we thank everybody who supports us on Patreon, but we do give a shout-out to anybody at the $5 and above level. So let's do that right now, kicking it off with Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Alana Fontano.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew Primo.
Ashy G.
Beercat, PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Harley W.
Carrie Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jeremilo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Daniel Warden, bringing us home.
Danny Heck.
Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Maynard.
Doug Suttaway.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett Quish.
Enrique Chumbas.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard de Villa.
The accent, perfect every time. Ian Rainey.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wright.
Julian Lobato.
K.C. Newhaven.
Kelby.
Clevin Kleinrock.
Karen Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Luana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Matt Tice. So nice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Matthew DePalma.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Orin Dix.
Otis Larsen.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Roxanne Tyler.
My mom.
Sarah Schottmuller. Hey!
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamela Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Batch.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zika's Viral Comics.
I cut off there. I didn't even see that.
Zachary Bachman is what you were supposed to say. Thank you so much, everybody. All the money that you give us goes directly to paying our audio technicians, so we really appreciate it. And why don't we get into the show? We have some amazing guests for you this evening.
That's fun.
Let's bring in first. He is the creator behind, among many other things, Mandalorian and Child, which is out now. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey Brown. Jeffrey, welcome back to the show.
Hey, hello. Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Oh my gosh. Thanks for coming back. I forgot to bring my book downstairs. There you go. But everybody else brought their books. And if you're listening to the other podcast, oh man, I'm so left out. I left mine upstairs. I meant to bring it down, but I got frazzled by the audio. Jeffrey, this book is once again great. It came out in November from Chronicle, if I remember correctly. And per the title, this is the latest of how do you think about it? Like, I was about to call it just sort of short form cartoons, but I don't know if that's exactly how you characterize it or.
Yeah. You know, it's something that I've noticed, like when I try to describe, cause it's like my middle grade books, it's easy. I can just say it's, you know, it's a middle grade graphic novel. And these, it's like, I guess it's one page gag cartoons, except sometimes it's two pages. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes they're not exactly gags. They're like more like sweet kind of emotional moments more than humorous. I mean, even if there are humorous too. So yeah, I don't know. I leave that to the publisher. So that's on them to define things.
I do think is a little different about this one though, is with the previous ones you've recast, you know, you've done a bunch of different things, but you've recast a lot of the Star Wars characters like as kids, like the Darth Vader and Son thing. So you have little Luke and whatever. Here you have an actual child. Does that make it easier or does it make more difficult because they've already done so much on the TV show?
Yeah, I mean, it's the difficulty. Yeah. The one difficulty is the fact that, you know, it's like there are moments on the show that are pretty funny because Grogu is a child. And I guess that's the other difficulty is like, it's hard when something's funny already, like, how do you find the humor or find the humor from a different angle? And I guess the third difficulty, and this was probably the biggest thing was that, the other Star Wars books have a vast amount of material to draw from beyond the movies. Whereas the show, you know, there's a limited number of episodes so far, and there really isn't like, you know, the whole expanded universe that I can kind of pull from in addition, even though, you know, the runtime, there's actually quite a bit of minutes of film to use for the book. But it's kind of like more like the behind the story, like the backstory that is easier when you're working with the iconic like Vader and Luke and Leia.
Well, in the Mandalorian, there's a lot of non-parenting parts of the TV show, so I feel like you have a little bit of source material, but it's a lot of sort of finding moments between the moments, like you said. Now, did you feel like you had to sort of put a little bit more of an age on Grogu here? Because I feel like the show plays pretty fast and loose with it.
Yeah, I mean, the show, Grogu, I feel like he grows up quite a bit from season one to season three. And, you know, it's always something that with all the books, you know, when I'm working with like little Luke and little Leia too, there's a certain vagueness you want to have where once you start defining like a super specific age, it kind of undermines or limits what you're able to do. So like one of the comics that I look to is like Peanuts, the way sometimes they're kids and they're really young kids. And sometimes they're like kids that are almost like teenagers and kid bodies. And sometimes they're just like, these are full grown old men, you know, talking. And so it's a little bit of that. And, but Grogu doesn't talk. So that kind of, you know, that kind of puts some parameters on things.
Could you talk about him artistically a little bit, specifically your approach to Grogu? Because it strikes me, this is coming from my non-artistic perspective, it might be difficult to delineate Yoda from Grogu in art. Could you talk about that
and
challenge?
I mean, that was one of the things, like when I first started sketching, Lucasfilm was like, you know, like, make sure he doesn't look like Yoda. And it was something that I had a kind of sketch enough to get past where he wasn't just looking like a slightly different version of Yoda. And also, you know, like there's been other kind of stylized cartoony versions of Grogu, and it's there's a process of finding kind of like, how do I draw Grogu? And yeah, so it's just basically like over doing, when I'm coming up with ideas, I fill kind of a sketchbook, and this is kind of like my very first ideas here, which I guess, sorry, if you're only listening to audio, you're missing out, but
That's
you know, awesome. like there's, when I'm sketching, things are even simplified more, and that kind of gives me the kind of the groundwork to how I've simplified it for the book when I'm doing the final artwork. And then it's just kind of adding a little more detail. But I mean, like the basic story is, you know, just Grogu's wrinkly because he's a baby, but not as wrinkly as Yoda. Yeah.
Got those young wrinkles. There's a difference. Well,
we're familiar with that.
Love your stuff. It's really fun. It's you know, all your books are, you know, have a real levity to them. It's what I like. It's like a peek inside. You know, we've seen them, you know, Grogu from the show, but this is kind of like fun in between adventures that we kind of get a look into. The one we just kind of saw up there, which is one of my favorites. I had it marked in the book, but Alex was smart enough to put it up there. I like the, you know, it's like, well, how would Grogu fingerprint? Well, he would do it this way. So it's a fun kind of exploration of the character. Do you kind of map out like fun activities to do with the kids, and then like, oh, how would Grogu do these, or how do you kind of explore that?
It's always a mix of two. There's two kind of ways that I approach the thinking. The first way is that where I'll think of something that kids do, and think like how can that fit into something from the show or a character from the show, and then the other way is to think of like a scene that I like in the show or a character in the show. And then I have to kind of like think what's a parenting situation or like a real life situation that I could like translate that into or mesh that with.
Cool.
And so it's kind of like, sometimes I'll have a list of like all the kids' things, and I'll kind of cross them off as I come up with things. And then same thing with like, less so with the show. I think there's the kind of the, in terms of quotes, like for the Vader books, there's like all these classic lines from the movies, and so I would have like a list of classic lines just kind of, and then on the side, and as I'm going through with the drawings, like kind of double checking that list, and like, what's a quote I haven't used before that might like a good line from the movies.
Well, similarly, this is, like you're saying, it's more recent, right? So is there, looking back at all the properties, these have been parodied to death, the lines have been done to death, and people keep finding new life and new ways to hit them. This is something relatively fresh and new. Does that open it up more, or do you find that Lucasfilm holds it a little tighter because they're still developing it as they go?
I mean, both. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're definitely like this property, or this side of Star Wars as a property, like there was a lot more, I don't want to say restrictions, but like there was like the guidelines were more specific. And so
So in that way, like that's a little bit, I mean, it's not really difficult because it's just like, I just churn out the ideas and then it's, you know, then they just kind of say yes or no. So it's not like I have to like worry about staying in the lines. Like they'll tell me if I'm going out of the lines and I can say, okay.
Yeah. Not that, but, I guess.
Yeah. So it's, you know, but yeah, in terms of, you know, it's something I ran into with the Ray and Powell's book, working with like the new trilogy for the films, where I'm working with characters that they maybe don't know what their plans are, and or maybe they have their plans, but they don't want anyone else to know, or like, or maybe like it could go one of two ways, and they've decided. So, but you know, with this book, I, you know, it's a thing, but it didn't really, I didn't really feel like it affected the process. The Ray and Powell's book was the one where like that was definitely, it was definitely an effect where it's like, cause when I was working in that one, it's like, who is Ray? Like, is Luke actually her father somehow, you know, like what are, mm-hmm. you know, like there's all these yeah. theories and I was not given any secret info, whether they knew that and when I was working on it or not, like those details. So
there's so many guest stars in the book. What was the easiest to sort of slide in outside of Mando and Child? And what was sort of the hardest to be like, where's the place for this character?
I mean, Boba Fett actually ended up being pretty easy. You know, it's like, it's almost like once you kind of figure out like if, you know, Grogu is the found family for Mando, and Boba's like the cool uncle who's maybe not, you know, a blood uncle, but he's like the uncle in the trio. Ahsoka took some time for me to figure out, like I would have liked to have had maybe more with her, but it was just hard with how much she was in the show and everything. Now we've had a whole Ahsoka series, it might be different, but she was probably like the tough one where it took me a while to like find some places that it would make sense for her.
Yeah, with fewer sort of areas of the Star Wars universe being explored in TV and film, where areas do you want to go in? Like, is there a book of Baby Fett that we can expect?
Baby Fett. You know, I hadn't really thought about it. I'm like, so it's, you know, my relationship with Star Wars is hard because on the one hand, I really like drawing Star Wars, and it's been great to like be able to create things within the universe. But I'm also like just a fan. So like where my head's at, it's like I'm really looking forward to Andor season 2. You know, it's like
right.
And like I don't even like that. That's so that's like I haven't even thought like, oh, what? Yeah, what would I?
Well,
like?
Could you do an Andor book in this style, given how serious that is?
I don't think so. I mean, like I loved Rogue One, and it's another one too, where it's like, what, like, is it possible to do one of these books where, like, I mean, spoiler alert, so volume off for a couple seconds here, but you know, it's like, how do I do one of these books where everyone dies?
Yeah,
it's a little heavy. Even though, like, Rogue One, I think K2SO is like super funny, and there's lots of humor in that film, as dark as it is.
Rogue fun.
There you go. We have a couple of questions here over on YouTube. This is one from Nat Townsend, more of a general question. Do you guys have any advice on what I should do with a pair of Ahsoka themed Minnie Mouse ears that I received as part of a promotion?
Sell them on eBay.
Great for a Christmas card.
Jeff, any suggestions?
I mean, I think you're supposed to wear them.
That's the best answer.
Like, that's why we have the experts
keep
on.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. Pixar didn't happen, Nat.
And we have one more specifically for you, Jeff. This is from Edward Doherty. Does Jeff have any plans for more biographical comics like Clumsy?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a long time. You know, it's even though I've been working in Star Wars and things, there is a lot of autobiographical elements. So, with Vader and son, it was, you know, a lot of my parenting experiences with my son. With Jedi Academy, you know, it's kind of drawing on my experiences in middle school and high school. But as far as like straightforward autobiographical, I hadn't really had like a full book idea in a long time. And I've started to have like a little short story. So I might do like a mini comics worth. I've been trying to like have it gel. But you know, it's one of those things where my career, like I have this whole career before I started doing Star Wars where it was like doing these autobiographical comics. And it was almost like this kind of natural transition because that stuff had not run its course, but I kind of, you know, I said the things that I wanted to say with those books. And I don't want to force something that's, you know, just for the sake of, like, I'd like to do more of that stuff, but I don't want to do it just because I feel like I should do it. And so I'm kind of waiting for the right inspiration for it.
I mean, on that note, one thing that I really love about these Star Wars books, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in the back matter, you always have a picture of yourself and your two sons, right? Dressed up in costume. I love just seeing them get older and older.
Yeah, it's really,
it's so delightful.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny as it's like, you know, like autobiographical me is, you know, I still draw myself like when I was 25 years old. So it's like, I haven't really updated it. So it's like with my sons, I've like with this, with the Mando and Child book, I tried specifically like, okay, like I need to like age them up a little bit.
That's awesome. Other than this, obviously this only came out a month ago, but do you have another one lined up or is there anything else you want to plug coming
up? As far as what I can talk about, because that's one of the one of the hard things about these licensed projects is, you know, it's like I was working on the Mandalorian and Child book for a long time, and people are, you know, people are asking like, you're gonna do something with Mandalorian, and like, I don't know. So yeah, I've got a couple projects that I'm working on that I can't say yet, but the one that I just wrapped up is a sequel to my middle grade Batman book, Batman and Robin and Howard. We have a sequel that's Batman and Robin and Howard Summer Breakdown, and they're gonna release it as kind of 48 or 64, I forget. So three kind of slim volumes or thick issues.
Cool. That's great.
And so sometime next year those will come out, and that'll be eventually be collected. So
That's awesome. My son loved that first book, so he's going to be very excited to hear that. I am too, of course. I'm just saying, also my son.
Thank you.
Yes,
that's nice.
Awesome, Jeffrey, thank you so much for coming on. Always a pleasure to see you.
Of course.
Thanks for sending us the books, man. Love them.
Yeah,
thank you.
Great to talk to you. See you soon.
All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Mandalorian and Child. It's from Jeffrey Brown, and it's out now from Chronicle Books. It's right in your face if you're watching the video stream. Listen, why don't we bring in our next guests?
Listen.
They are... Listen.
Hey, Alex, relax.
Calm down. Calm down.
Don't yell at somebody about something they're already doing.
Wow. Traffic cop over here.
Yeah.
This mic thing's really thrown me. I'm very sorry. Yeah. All right, why don't we move on and bring in our next guest? They are the creators behind the awesome
Save His Life,
Drive Like Hell from Dark Horse Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, Rich Duck and Alex Cormack, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good to see you, Alex. You're on mute, so listen.
Isn't that embarrassing? Oh, listen.
No. We've never had sound quality issues on this podcast.
Yeah. Never. That's why we pay our audio tech. That's why we pay our audio tech so much money. Guys, we love this book. This is so much fun for anybody who hasn't checked it out. It's the short pitch, I think, is it's about a dude who steals a car. Turns out it's literally the car from hell. and ends up basically in a Fast and Furious type situation, you know the kind, with a bunch of demons after him and other things. This is great. It's super fun. Talk to us a little bit about the germ of the idea. You guys have worked together a lot. So at this point, is it just kind of bouncing around ideas until one sticks? Where did this come from?
We do bounce around ideas back and forth. This one happened to come up. It was like during the pandemic, and we weren't really sure what was going on with our books that were in progress, because basically like the whole industry had shut down. So Alex was like, "What do you got?" I sent him a couple of ideas, and he's like, "I want to do the one with the cars." And I'm like, "Are you sure? You're gonna have to like draw a lot of cars, like generally don't like to do." And he's like, "No, I want it." So so we did it. I think with our IDW books, we're like very kind of like a serious kind of horror, you know, like a lot of tension and a lot of you know, just people being like horrible and stuff. And I kind of think of this book as like a little bit of like a palate cleanser, you know, because it really like has its roots in like just loving like all those old like 70s car movies, like Smokey and the Bandit and the Blues Brothers and stuff like that. All the way up to, you know, Fast and the Furious, for, you know, because I'm sure 90% of the people I'm talking about have no fucking idea what those movies are. But.
I did want to mention, sorry, I forgot to mention this earlier before we get too far. So every week on the show, we have a professional chef named Brett Macris, who either curates or designs a drink. And this week he actually made a drink inspired by your book.
That's awesome.
Don't drink and drive like hell. It's got bourbon. It's got a little chili liqueur, Campari. Yes, stay safe out there, everybody. Orange bitters, orange peel, and it's pretty delicious. A little spicy, got a little bit of burn, like the hell stuff going on. Real good stuff.
This is like right up my alley. I just got to go get some chili liqueur, and I'm going to make this. That's awesome.
Highly recommend. Ancho Reyes is the official speaker of Comic Book Club. I don't know. I'm just kidding.
It certainly is popular in this group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll send you the drink later. I just wanted to bring that up before I forget. It's very delicious. Brett wins again with another great drink. But you have won again with another great book. So let's get back to that instead. What? Just amazing segues?
Yes.
It sounds like segues. It's like nuance. It's like poetry. I wish I could hear you.
Alex, I did want to ask you. Alex, given what Rich was saying in terms of the cars, what are the challenges there? Not just when you're drawing cars, but also I know I'm kind of a broken record when I talk about this on the show, but like we all know comics are a static page. You're drawing car races, which are the opposite of that. So what are your challenges there in terms of depicting that artistically?
Just that. Just make sure they don't look like they're all parked, which is, which, you know, so when starting this, it was somebody had up a while ago saying like they were going to give somebody like a bunch of cards to draw in a comic. And somebody on Twitter said this, and I thought that was like, oh, give me that challenge. I'll bring it on. Just being full of myself. And so then like actually getting into it, I'm like, oh shoot, how am I supposed to do this? Like I figured out how to draw a car, but to make it look like it's moving and all that. See, there it is. What's that?
It looks like it's moving.
Yeah. It's thanks. Good. All right. That's a relief. But so I got a couple ideas that I kind of borrowed from other people. But so I was flipping through like any book that I had that had a car chase in or anything with cars. And one thing I noticed out of Sin City books, anytime they're showing the cars going, they're like the wheels are never on the ground. They're always up in the air, bouncing, bopping around. So that was just one of the tricks I did. I'm like, all right, this, you know, especially Lucy, our main car there. Those wheels are never hitting the ground. That sucker's flying. Anytime that like, if this was like somebody had a camera and taking a photo of this, you just always caught it on a bounce, you know? Mm. And along with that, just speed lines. Which was something like, honestly, I've never done too much of. And then our friend Joe Mulvey, he did a commission, I think, of somebody for him. I think like Akira, or like what's the one with the motorcycle slide?
Yeah, Akira.
And which is something I still need to check out. But yeah, he did such a good job, and then I'm like, oh, he killed it on the speed lines. I gotta try that one of these days. So yeah,
right behind you there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's going so fast. It's awesome on the ground. Yeah. Rich, from a story perspective, you got this guy and his girlfriend who is dead, but not quite dead in the car. Why were these the important characters to hook the story on?
Well, I kind of wanted to do like a little bit of like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing, where you had this this couple who and their gang kind of pulling off these like heists and jobs and things like that. But I think the thing with Bobby Ray, especially as a character, is that he's just kind of cut from the mold of somebody who is not going to be kind of like told what to do by the police, by the devil, by God or anybody. Like, he's going to like really just like the entire universe could be telling him like, look, just, you know, give the car back or whatever. And it's like, he doesn't give a, you know, it's like, this is my car now. I love it, you know, and I want it. So I think that was just kind of like the mold I was going through with him. And then with Dahlia, she's almost kind of like the voice of reason, you know, like a little bit more like realistic about like what's going on. And like, you know, like we got to take certain things into account here. But I mean, honestly, like there's a really simple reason why there's two of them. And that's because it's like, if it was him alone in the car, like every in-car scene, it's like, who's he talking to? He's talking to,
you kind of need
somebody to talk to. And, mm-hmm. you know, then you can have those scenes where like, you know, they could talk to each other and like they're in the car, you know, and it doesn't get like, you know, just like boring. Like, you know, you don't want like every scene where you're like seeing inside the car of him just being like, you know, eyes on the road,
steadfast,
yeah,
obeying all traffic rules as he
goes. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I just like the idea that the voice of reason is someone who's got a hole in the head.
Yeah,
yeah. I feel that way a lot.
We got a good general question here from YouTube I wanted to bring up. I'd love to get your guys' answer as well. Easy Reader says, what was your first car?
Oh.
My first hell car?
My first car was a fabulous 1996 Mercury Mystique named Samantha. Samantha, and I had a little hula doll there named, yeah, and a whole bit, and I ran that thing to the ground.
Oh man,
nice red car, and yeah, that was back in
R.I.P. Samantha. Say the day, the year.
Rich, what about you? First car?
Mine was actually a Lincoln Mark 7, getting rid of, and sold it to me instead of just like rando. So yeah, it was nice.
That's a much cooler car. Nice.
What year was it?
Oh god, I don't remember. It must have been like early 90s, maybe late 80s, because it was pretty old like when I got it. In good shape, but that was fun. Speaking of first cars though, I do have a fun story about the car, what inspired the car in Drive Like Hell, which is a 1980 Turbo Trans Am.
Oh.
My dad actually had that car. And we used to drive around in it when I was like,
wow,
you know.
Do you do donuts and stuff in it? Or
Probably. I don't know. Not with me in the car. I remember riding in it and like going really fast on the highway and stuff, like in the back seat and whatnot.
Nice.
And yeah, it was literally, it was the car from like Smokey and the Bandit where it had like that big firebird on the
front. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah. But ours was, it was white with like a bluebird on it.
Oh, so cool. I love
it. And it got stolen. It got stolen three times.
Of course it did. Yeah. Too cool. Too cool for this world.
Yeah.
Everybody coveted it.
We can't have nice things. It's like, you know. Yeah.
No wonder you're writing about stealing cars. It's your albatross.
And then like, and then the last time some guy like he just, whoever the guy that stole it, just like totaled it. So,
heartbreaking.
Sad. Man,
lack of respect. That's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Pete, what was your first car?
Well, my first car was the
'85
Buick Regal. It was 2-tone gray. The thing was a boat. My brother totaled it going through trying to turn into a Taco Bell at like 2 a.m. But my favorite car,
he hit the Taco Bell.
He didn't hit the Taco Bell.
Taco Bell.
Luckily, he hit somebody who was drunker than he was, so he didn't get the
Get a ticket if
you can't get that. Yeah, drunk. As long as the other one's clearly, they were both trying.
Sorry, I just want to break.
That's Rochester.
Don't drink and drive like hell. Don't.
Yeah. Where was that? Where was that 25 years ago, Alex?
Sorry, yeah, I'll send it back in time. Sorry.
Yeah, that's gonna be super helpful. But my favorite was I had an 85 Buick Regal I called the Spanish Fly, and that thing was 2-tone tan, and it was glorious.
I love the 2-tone vibes you're giving off. You love a second tone.
I do. I do.
I drove a 79 Ford F-150 that was rusted out on one side, white truck with a red tailgate that for some reason had two gas tanks, and there was a little switch. It was a long stick, like a truck.
Was one diesel? What?
I don't know why there were two, but I.
Why is there two gas tanks?
I was like, watch this. And I would press the button, and then we didn't have to get gas.
Oh, man.
It's like James Bond shit for a.
Check this button out. Now we're both on empty. Hey.
It's like Spy Hunter. Yeah, exactly. I'm broke twice. It was like Spy Hunter on NES, me over there. Oh, man.
Now, guys, this is nothing to do with the
Alex. Where's your truck in this?
Oh, I had a Nissan Sentra hatchback. I think at the time it was called Datsun, and then they changed it over to Nissan, or I don't remember. Tons of trunk space in that thing. It was great.
Wow, does that sound wild weird? Wild teen on the loose over here.
Look out.
I did a lot of theater. I can carry stuff in the back. I was the guy with they were like, put all the props in there.
Hey, you guys need a place for your props. You
can, that's what teens use trunk, like a nice hatchback for, right? Like, ooh, there's a lot of space in the trunk. Let's put props in there, right?
Yeah.
Guys?
Sure.
Yes. Okay, great. I wanted to ask you guys about the publishing of things at Dark Horse in particular, because I noticed that you have the solicit for the first four issues. But we already know when the trade collection is coming out at the same time. I think it's coming out in July. Where does that give you like a little bit of relaxation there to know, okay, they're already in for all of that? And where is the focus, in your opinion, from Dark Horse? Is it the single issues? Is it the trade? Is it both of those things?
I think it does kind of help to know that there's like a solid schedule in place that we're going to stick to. We worked all of it out, like, I guess like earlier this year or like end of last year, like what the schedule is going to be. So, you know, I know like when I have to get my scripts in, Alex knows when he has to get, you know, inks in, colors in, stuff like that. So it does help. I think, Dark Horse switched over to Penguin Random House from Diamond, and they apparently like to have everything in sooner than Diamond would have. So like, so it was kind of like, Alex, I'm not sure, like, but did you do the cover for number four before you even started on an issue four, right? Like,
oh yeah, yeah. The covers were all done before. I think I did the cover for four before even like in the middle of number two.
Yeah,
it might have been like, yeah. So those covers were done fast.
Yeah,
and like the series has been drawn and colored and finished now for about a month, right?
Yeah, about a month. Yeah.
So, now they're coming out. Which I mean, it's great. Now they can go out. You don't have to worry about it, like, you know, whatever's late or anything like that, or like, you know, I get sick or something like that, and I, you know, miss a week or something like that. No, it's done. It's just now. It's gonna come out with everything as it comes out, you know.
Yeah,
yeah. As far as like the trades versus issues, I do think it's both, but I think they're definitely like the book market and stuff like that is like very important to them. Like it's not like, you know, it's not an afterthought. Like they really like design the trade to like, it's going to look really, really cool. Like it's going to have like, you know, silly things like spot gloss, like on the cover and stuff like that. And, like the pages they designed for the inside look really good. So it's going to be a really nice like presentation.
Yeah, I'm excited to get that. Yeah, the whole thing together. It's gonna be fun.
Oh, that's great. I wanted to ask you guys about a couple of other projects, if that's okay. Rich, this was announced, I believe, earlier today. You're going to be writing a Cyborg Spider-Man story in Spider-Verse number 2. What can you tell us about that?
That came about like just pretty randomly. I had been like talking to Nick Lowe, who edits Spider-Man for a while, about doing something, and he just emailed me. He's like, "Hey, do you remember Cyborg Spider-Man?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do." You know,
I definitely do right now.
I googled it immediately after, but I was like, just to make sure. But yeah, it was just this like fun design that Eric Larson came up with while he was on the book, and you know, it's like totally like 90s, like bulky, you know, cyborg stuff, and like, you know, pouches and stuff like that, probably for some reason, you know. But it was like a very like, you know, quintessential, like, you know, like 90s like take on like Spider-Man. And talking to Nick, he was just like, this is like a really cool design, and like we've never really done much with it. Like, do you want to just write like a short story? Like, he's like, you can go. I'm like, sure. Like, is there anything like I need to keep in mind? He's like, no, go crazy. So I did. And I think like, I don't know how much I'm supposed to spoil about the story, but I will say this. I thought a cyborg Spider-Man would deserve some cyborg foes. So
yes,
I did some.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, it's very funny to think that all those 90s cyborg characters had so much like junk on them. They're like covered in metal, when really it'd just be like, you're cyborg now. Later.
Yeah. And I think we did kind of like streamline the design a little bit. Like we did like update it to make it look a little bit more modern. But it's definitely got its roots in that, Eric Larson 90s goodness, you know.
Yeah, you got like a Mac 2E hanging off your neck or whatever.
Yeah,
as long as you keep that headband, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The headband.
That's the most important part of the character. Yeah.
Google Glass. Yeah.
And Alex, you're working on another title, The Devil That Wears My Face, with David Capoze, who we talked to him about this bit in Baltimore before it came out. And I think, if I remember correctly, he was pitching it to us at the table, and he's like, it's like Face Off meets The Exorcist. Yep. And some guy was passing by and was like, Face Off meets The Exorcist, that sounds cool.
Sign me up.
Yeah. You set that up, first of all.
That was me.
Yes. But second of all, like, very fun horror premise. This also, Drive Like Hell, also horror premise. What keeps drawing you back to draw horror?
It's offered. No, I don't know. I mean, horror's a blast to draw. It's fun. It's fun to get in there and just draw some gnarly stuff, you know. Like, especially if you got like a scene where it's like gonna be like all gory and stuff like that. Nice and relaxing, because like, you know, if you mess them up, if you mess up the anatomy, so they're all chopped up anyway, so it's fine. it's fun to do. It's challenging. And the thing with like horror, I've said this before, but like the nice thing, especially with horror comics opposed to a movie or anything like that, like, you know, you have to have it on the page. There's no, like, you can't rely on sound, you can't rely on editing, you can't rely on quick cuts. the most you got is the page turn. And so whatever you're going to throw in there, you better make it work, because, you know, whoever's looking at it can look at it for a second, or they can park with it and just look at it for a long, like all day if they want to. And so
if it has a lot of speed lines, you have to read it really fast.
That's right. But it's fun. And it's funny. It's one of those, like, I didn't mean to like get out to be like a horror artist or anything like that. But hey, if people dig that my work in horror, then great. I'd be very happy to do it for the rest of my life. You know,
you just love the devil so much.
He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. He's got stories.
Funny how?
Yeah, funny. Yeah, it's.
Before we let you guys go, the first two issues are out now. Issue 3 is coming out pretty soon now, at the beginning of January. I was going to say the beginning of January. That's so far away. It's not. What can you tease about the second half of the series?
So in the second half of the series, I think we're going to see, you're definitely going to like get a definitive answer as to like what's in the trunk and why everyone is all after, why they're all after this. You're going to see maybe some angels get involved as well as devils. And you're going to see a lot of car chases and car crashes and evil cops and things like that. Like we're trying to like kind of step it up with like every issue as far as like just the vehicular madness that was going on.
Can I make a quick guess at what might be in the trunk? Is it theater props? Because in
that's a good one. Yeah. Scary.
All Dark Horse, we're going to change this.
Let me say, Alex, it is scary to think of a person bragging about the theater props in their trunk. So that feels like a horror story.
Yeah. I'll write my own book. Don't you guys even worry about it. Rich, Alex, thank you so much for coming on. Lovely seeing you.
Thanks so much. Great.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Second half.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
All right. There we go. Once again, Rich Duick and Alex Cormack. The book is called Drive Like Hell. Like we just mentioned, you can check out the first two issues right now. The next issue is out January 3rd. And the trade paperback, as we also mentioned, is out July 3rd. So check out all of that.
TPB.
And now we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It's your audience question. Do for audience questions is you got to drop a question in the comments over on Facebook or YouTube or Twitch, not X or Twitter, because they don't do that, and not Instagram because we couldn't figure out how to make work. But
we will.
We will. I'm going to look into it this week. We'll see if we can do it for next week. In the meantime, though, what are you guys drinking? I'm still working on this Don't Drink and Drive Like Hell, which is very good. I will reemphasize. What about you guys?
I drank that. It was very good. And now I've moved on to a Montauk Surf beer.
Oh, man.
Surf's up. I'm going to hang 10 of these.
You guzzled it.
Pete, that's my beer. You can't drink that.
Oh, I can. I'm from Rochester, motherfucker.
I'm from further north than you, so I technically own Labatt Blue. But you live in Pennsylvania. You live in Pennsylvania now. Shouldn't you be drinking those PA garbage beers?
Oh, whoa. Puff the brakes, bro.
All right, we got a couple of questions here, so why don't we get into this? This is from Dean Delp. Did you guys see the movie Godzilla Minus One? If so, what did you think of it? I thought it was outstanding. I will tell
Dean,
you.
Have you seen it?
No. I'm off of work this week. So yesterday I was like, oh, this is great. I can go take myself to see the Godzilla movie. And then we had like a minor flood in the basement and my daughter got sick and a million other things. I'm like, well, never going to see that movie, I guess.
That's one I haven't seen. It's definitely movie watching season. I've seen a ton of movies, but I haven't gotten to that one yet. I'm going to try because that's one got to see in the theater.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to see it. It's definitely on my list, too. I can't wait to see it, but I have not seen it yet. And I feel horrible because I love Godzilla.
Yeah, he was actually talking about it. Godzilla said he was disappointed you hadn't seen it yet, Pete.
Oh, man. Yeah. I'm sorry, Godzilla.
Godzilla cried a nuclear tear.
Oh, man.
I haven't seen the movie.
People had to have died.
Tear. Yeah. Killed like
thanks, Dean. Great to hear from you. Sorry, I'm not on Facebook anymore, bro.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's you're nice.
What protesting apology. Meta. Kevin says, favorite comics for the winter holidays.
Ooh, that's to curl nice up with a nice winter comic, you know?
What was that Greg Rucka book, Running Through the Snow, where like, was that?
White Out.
There we
wow,
go.
That's Pete, nailed it.
Nice. Come on, man. That's... We've been doing this too long.
Favorite winter comics? I'm going to say from this year, I wish to throw the Seasons Have Teeth to stay.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Ooh, wow.
As that. But honestly, I feel like, especially winter break, it's back issue time. It's time to dig in. Ooh. And reread something you love. I think I'm going to dive into Bone over this holiday break.
Oh, interesting.
I'm also going to dive into Bones this holiday season. Let's move on. Talk about The Big. Hi, guys. Question for Pete. How do you feel about Letterkenny coming to an end? Also, are you and all those comic boxes in your basement?
No, this is my basement. Unfortunately, like Zelvatron, my basement is having flooding issues. So I'm up in the attic where everything's safe. Boys. Yeah, Media. I did not know that Leonard Kenny was coming in. That makes me very last sad. Season. But I enjoyed the new season of Shoresy. So thought that was glorious. So I'm wondering if all of Leonard Kenny and Shoresy are coming to an end, or just.
I think no. I think just Leonard Kenny's coming to an end, and Shoresy may be coming back again.
Oh wow, well that's weird.
To give you some news,
this started with Leonard Kenny. And then we got the,
I know, the fans. Know. Pete, have you ever seen them live? They've been touring live these past couple of years.
Oh, no. That would be a ton of fun to go see.
We should go next time they come through. I saw them not this year, but last year, and it was very fun.
Oh, man.
A lot of the folks come through and do stand-up, and it's good.
How could you go without me?
I don't know. Well, this is before I knew you were such a fan.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm a huge fan.
Because I was sort of the Letterkenny guy on here, and then
oh, what?
Are you claiming Canada again, buddy? I love
from further north than you. Just because you're drinking Canadian beer, that's stolen valor. I'm from the border.
Oh my god,
Rochester's like basically on the lake.
This is from Nat Townsend. Question for the guests. Oops. sorry. What were your favorite comics of 2023? Sorry,
you
know, Nat.
I read these before you put them up on the screen. You know
no, I mean? I can't. I can't bet stuff. I'm sorry. It's against our contract. But I will say, as a little plug, we're going to be doing our best comics of 2023 with no guests next week. So that's like the opposite of what you were asking, Nat.
Hey, hooray.
Yay. Edward Doherty says, most memorable props from a comic book movie prior to the MCU and after.
That's great. This is a question for Alex, who is, as we know, the property master of.
The property master. I will say, I talked about this last week, but I finally watched
then don't repeat
the first
it.
Time. That sword he has with like the three little, tiny little swords.
Wait, would you say? I missed it.
I watched Blade for the first time.
Yes.
Blade. And that sword is the sword with the handle with like the three tiny smaller swords that pop out the other way. Very cool. Yeah,
that is cool. I guess from Blade, my favorite prop is the ice skates that some motherfuckers are trying to skate uphill with.
Wait, can I tell you? I looked up. I was trying to find out because I had an idea after we were talking about it. I was like, I could probably set up some sort of oral history of some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill. But Wesley Snipes talked about it last year during an interview. That line, and I swear to God, he must have made up this entire story because it sounds insane. But the way that he described the line, by the way, just like to give context for anybody who hasn't seen Blade in a while,
it sounds insane.
The kill line that he does with the big bad guy is
the
blood god. He says, he looks at him and says, some motherfuckers are always trying to skate uphill, ice skate uphill, and then he kills him, and it's very funny. But
it's
also
the most
nonsense.
Insane kill line. A movie that isn't about. There's never been a talk
that can't
of like
be the
ice.
Most insane. I mean,
it's the most random. It's the most random kill line. Okay. The movie's not. There's no ice skating. Ice skating uphill is a wild metaphor to use in that. Also, you don't really ice skate uphill. You ice skate on flat surfaces.
Yeah, it also doesn't have anything to do with the action or anything like that. But I like. legitimately laughed out loud when I heard that line. It's great. Anyway, the story that Wesley Snipes told is he was like, oh yeah, well, we were filming and trying to figure out that line, and we were having dinner, all of us, and talking. And we were eating this really good sour cream chicken. You know, it was chicken really covered in sour cream. The sort of chicken that, like, you want to lick under your fingernails after you're eating. And then I sent this line, and then it ended up in the movie.
Wait, he said the line about the chicken?
No, he said the line.
While he was eating the chicken.
It's this whole story where he's like, first of all, I don't know what sour cream chicken is. Is it just chicken covered in sour cream? Second of all, lick under your fingernails? That's how bad.
Like, if you've ever had good barbecue or something, you know. Yeah,
lick your fingertips, but not like.
But sometimes.
No, you haven't had barbecue that's that good.
Oh yeah, lick under.
Like Pete keeps tiny little fingernail garbage plates that he licks later.
Right, he has like the end of his tongue is paper thin, so it's really easy for him to.
Oh yeah, Pete has a snake tongue. He's partial tongue.
I think to answer the question, to go back to the audience question a little bit, I remember when we got a tour of when DC Comics was in New York. I got a tour of the facility, and one of the props that they had was a bust of oh my god, I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. He named his kid Kal-El. Oh my god,
from a
Nicolas
movie?
Cage.
Nicolas Cage. Thank you. it was a bust of Nicolas Cage as Superman, but because turns out Nicolas Cage is bald, it was like a bald bust, and it freaked me the fuck out, and it was just kind of like sitting there and it wouldn't stop looking at me, and it was really kind of insane to see.
Pete, it's actually right behind you right now.
I'm not falling for it.
You're about to be busted. My favorite prop from, I guess my favorite movie is upcoming Aquaman's trident from the upcoming.
Oh man, can't wait, dude! This weekend, let's go.
Me too. It's my favorite nap of whenever the first one came out, and I'm looking forward to sleep the shit out of this one too.
Yeah. Well, great. All right. This is from Nat Townsend on his question: what were your favorite comics of 2023? Nat, I gotta say, next week is when we're going to be talking about our favorite comics of 2023. Please, we're going to have a whole list. Before. We're going to count them down. Appreciate you asking, but we're going to talk about it then, okay? This is from Travis M. Would you rather do Pete's Arrow Corner for 8 straight hours or eat 4 garbage plates in one day? That's an easy one. Garbage plates.
Yeah, I've definitely eaten 4 garbage plates in a day before.
4 in one day? How'd you spread them out? Like, well, 1, 2 and one, or all
we
once?
Went, it was
4 in the morning, and then
you might, it might be, so yeah, you might be surprised at this, but we were really drunk, and we were like, oh god, I love garbage plates, I can eat these all day. And it was like, well, what, you know, we only really eat them when we're drunk. And then we're like, well, what if we at 4 in the morning just started drinking again and would basically get drunk, eat a garbage plate, sober up, drink again. So it was just kind of an all-day drinking affair, and we had for it. It was
because a lot of people,
my stomach, like, was so fucked up for a while. So
no,
yeah.
Garbage plates are what like after you've had a bunch of drinks, it's like, and people say hot coffee, but no, it's actually eating an entire garbage plate will sober you up.
It will sober you up. It's we would joke growing up, if you beat the cop to the garbage plate spot, they couldn't get you for drunk driving because you would be sober.
don't drink and drive like hell.
Yeah, let me bring
that. And instead of in the breathalyzer, you just blow one garbage plate rather than a number. This is a trick question because 8 hours of Pete's Arrow Corner involves at least 4 garbage plates. So,
have you seen the critical reaction to Rebel Moon on Rotten Tomatoes? Critical, yes. The reviews are bad for this new Zack Snyder movie.
No,
shocking turn of events. The tweets and social posts after the first screening were so funny to me, just because, like, they were So this is the first part of a two-part movie that he's releasing on Netflix. However, he's also said that he's limited it to a PG-13 movie, but he has an R-rated director's cut he's going to release later on. And everybody's like, you're putting it on Netflix. There doesn't need to be a director's cut. You could just put up the movie the way you want it. That's the whole point.
I think he knows his process, which is at least one cut, and then a weirder cut, and then one more cut finally.
100%. But every single post was like, oh, that was really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing when the plot starts to come together in the second part, and maybe it'll be fleshed out more in the director's cut. At every post, I was like, you could just say it's bad. That's fine. Like, it's clearly bad.
Yeah.
It's not clearly bad.
It's very funny. It's like releasing the trailer along with a press release, it says, and there will be a longer cut coming to major theaters everywhere.
Yeah. I'm still probably going to watch it anyway because
I may not watch it. I will say the poster looks like in a movie where they're trying to make fun of Star Wars without being able to use Star Wars. That's what the movie poster looks like. And maybe that's what the movie is.
Well, it was originally, for anybody who doesn't know, it was originally a Star Wars movie that he wrote. And they were like, we don't want to do this. And he's like, no problem. Gonna find and replace all the names. Here we go.
Great stuff.
Frederico Rosa says, have you guys watched the latest Doctor Who specials? I had never watched the show and really liked it.
All right. Wow.
Yeah.
Frederico.
I have. I thought the first two in particular were a ton of fun. Did not love the third one, but that's okay. I'm really looking forward to Nishuti Gatwa's era that's coming with the Christmas special. I haven't had a chance to watch it. I got a screener for it, but I've been a little busy. So, but yeah, Doctor Who, after years of it being like, I'm very strained watching this. It seems maybe to be good again. So that's very nice.
Wow.
Let us see if there is anything else here.
Probably a lot of Nat stuff you have to page.
Yeah, there is. There is. Stanley asking again, would you ever do a live show together? I think definitively at this point, the answer is no.
Speaking of that, isn't this show right now like our 18th year of doing this?
No, that was back at the beginning of the month was our 18th
year. Did we talk about it?
We did afterwards. We were like right at the end, I think this was our 18th anniversary or something.
We're really good at celebrating.
Well, we are going to do a live show.
That was our Ed Brubaker show. We celebrated it by having Ed Brubaker on.
And not Pete, unfortunately. Not a great celebration. We are going to do a live show. We're getting ever closer to selecting the date and location.
Real quick, just to check, which one of us is going to die before we do the live show?
Wait, real quick, which one of us is supposed to follow up with the theater about nailing down a date?
Whoever,
I honestly don't know at this point.
Whoever dies first has to follow up with the theater.
No, we got to get this going, man. I want to see you guys in real life and punch you.
The Big says, Alex, after the third Doctor Who episode, were you seeing Spice Girls for a week? I was not, because I don't like Neil Patrick Harris. Moving on. Frederico Rosa says, I just don't like him. He really grates on me. I don't know what it is. That might have been my problem with the third special, but good scene. I'm glad everybody liked it. Nope.
What about the Starship Troopers guy he plays?
Sure, he was fine as that. If you could erase a character or an event from comics history, which would you choose?
Wow. Cyclops? You wouldn't erase the Mary Jane Mephisto moment? You said your answer and you messed up.
I was too... my hatred of Cyclops blinded me.
Ironically.
Yeah.
Ironically.
I could erase a character or an event.
That's tough because it's all like out there.
Mephisto, Mary Jane bullshit. It would, this new.
You know what I currently don't love is I don't love the whole jackpot thing. Like having Mary Jane have powers just doesn't work for me. I'd erase that.
Well, and they're sort of only half doing it. It's in some stuff, not in others. It is a little strange. I agree with you, but I like the way that Jed McKay, Black Cat, and Mary Jane series sort of dealt with it. Yes. That it is, there was an emotional part of it, and that was really cool and interesting, I thought. I mean, honestly, my issue with comics is much less in erasing stuff or being like, that was a bad choice. It's the repetition. So I want more reality, more things, and not less things.
This is from Nat Towson. Audience question. What do you think were Zack Snyder's favorite comics of 2023? Once again, Nat, we're talking about our best comics next week, the week after Zack is releasing his director's cut of our best comics. So you can check that out.
It'll be
then.
Much longer.
We're not talking about it. It's going to be really fucked up.
This is a great question. Zack Snyder has never read a comic, though, I think it's all.
Hey.
He just gets it from the cover.
Last question. Why don't we wrap up on this one? Seriously, though, which one is going to die first?
I don't know. That's tough because I'm the youngest, so I should live the longest, but I also live the hardest.
You do live the hardest.
Yeah, no. I don't know. Pete is right in front of a very
thinking that. I just hope we're on the
comic books. It's a great way to go.
The Punisher shrine on top of your stack just crushes you, and you die happy. You die like, yes.
What would you do if your comics fell on you and the only comics that spilled out in reachable length were the Frankencastle comics?
I don't own those.
You don't own them?
Magically.
You didn't buy them?
Why would I?
Oh, when I come to visit you before you die, I slip them inside one of the boxes.
We stashed a bunch of Frankencastle.
I would give myself paper cuts with those pages and kill me faster. but I did want to point out, I got a great Christmas gift here. Stray Bullies, the unbelievable Stray Bullies sent me Ted Lasso Funko Pop, and I put it on my wall, my nerd wall.
That's
there.
Nice.
He made my Christmas, so it was quite nice of him.
That's really nice.
Very nice. Why don't we move on with our next section, which is my next favorite section, I guess.
Ooh,
because Pete
it sounds
it
like
up.
It's least favorite section.
Trivia!
Yay! This is the part we give the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. All we need is a first hand up, a brave volunteer, and we can get this bad boy a go.
You don't even have to be that brave.
Oh, Nat, Easy Rider said happy holidays. So,
Travis.
One of us.
There we
Travis.
Go.
Yeah, Travis. All right.
Ooh.
Cool beans. All right. Today's trivia is on comic book quotes and a small nod to the legend, Camden Toy, RIP. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go, Travis. Question number one. What comic book character once said, "Nobody suddenly discovers anything. Things are made slowly and in pain." Was it A, Wolverine, B, Doctor Strange, or C, Brian Austin Green?
That's nice. So Edward Doherty is pre-guessing ABA for the...
Doherty going in on the ABA there. So far, he has something.
It's going to be fun to... We'll really
is it A? I mean, while we're waiting for Travis, is it A?
It is A.
Wow. Let's say that Travis guessed A and move on.
All right. He got it right. Of course that was nice. Wolverine. He's talking about pain. Okay, here we go. Question number two. What comic book character said, "We can't help what we are, only what life we choose to make for ourselves"? Was it A, Batman, B, Wonder Woman, or C, Steve Rizzo?
It's a shame. This one feels like A, honestly.
It does.
Is it B, though?
It is B.
Wow, Aaron Doherty. Amazing. But Travis
we
got
do,
A.
I think we do have to let the people guess. We can't push it so far.
All right, here we go. Last one. Question number three. What comic book character said, "Brazen power always succumbs to silence and stealth"?
Wow, this is very
deep. Was it A, Alex's mom, B, Black Panther, or C, Mimi Michaels?
So that's weird because I think it would be B, Black Panther, but my mom always says that.
That's true.
Mm.
Yeah.
Does she, though?
She's always commenting that.
Mm-hmm. She did say to me today, I was talking to her on the phone, and she was like, so can I listen to your podcasts on iHeartRadio? And I was like, yes.
That's nice. We were like,
oh. We're almost there. We're almost there.
Did she say, I heard that Justin's mom is supporting the show, and now I feel a lot of pressure to get involved.
Yeah, she said that, but about Pete's mom, which I don't know.
They have a, Pete is correct, Travis. You did it. You got it all right. Track.
And nice. Pete, what was the secret movie from?
That's correct. Yeah. We've been doing this for years. We've been doing this for years.
I'm only asking because he's most known, I think, for Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Hey, nice job. Yeah, I did. I wondered if you would know who he is. Yeah. Of course, I'm talking about the 2011 movie Chrome Skull Laid to Rest 2.
What?
Real quick, what's your favorite scene in that movie? Because there's so many. I find it so hard to choose.
There are a lot of scenes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great scenes.
Brian Austin Green, who you name checked.
Yeah, I would have to say probably when you think he's dead and they're laying to rest, but then he comes back to life. You know what I mean? Man,
that scene is crazy. That is crazy scene.
Because his skull is so chrome.
Yeah. Oh, man. It's hard to kill somebody when they got a chrome dome.
Travis, congratulations. You've won a gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. And folks, why don't we move and talk about new comics that are coming out this week? What are you guys looking forward to? Pete, what's on your pull list?
Oh, I tell you what, The Deviant number 2 is on my pull list. Great. As well as Batman Offworld number 2.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Traditional comics.
Yeah,
I also have two that I'm excited for. Number one is Animal Pound number 1 by Tom.
Oh, King. Dude. Oh, man. I can't wait to talk to you about this.
That's going to be some fun stuff. Oh, man. Book. Not really a spoiler, I don't think, but because
it's the start of the animal revolution is this book right here.
But it's sort of Tom King's comic book version of Animal Farm set in a pound, which I thought was very cool. And then I got to give it up for Doctor Strange number 10 by my guy, Jed McKinney.
Oh, yeah.
Art by Pascal Ferry. I love this book, and this is an exciting one.
Lots of stuff I was excited about this week. A couple of things that I'll mention. Uncanny Spider-Man number 5 from Marvel. I've been loving this series, so excited to see where it wraps up.
So good.
Also, I was very interested in Shift number 1 from Image Comics. Shift is probably the one villain from the massive verse who's really stuck out in any way. So I was curious to see that this is a collection of a bunch of short stories that have followed him. I think they were in the Image 25 anthology or something like that.
Yeah.
Plus an original story. So curious to check that out as well. Those are all going to be in our Stack podcast that posts Wednesday at 9 a.m. in the Stack feed and the Comic Book Club feed. And folks, that is it for this week's shoo. Couple of people we want to thank Rich Dueck and Alex Cormack for coming on to talk about Drive Like Hell. First two issues are out now. You can check out the third issue on January 3rd and the trade on July 3rd. Also, Jeffrey Brown for talking about Mandalorian and Child, which is out now from Chronicle Books. Next week on the show, as mentioned, we're going to be talking about our best comics of 2023, just on time. This is, I believe, the first list of its type that's going to come out, so that's very exciting.
Ever thought to rank before.
I know. Man, I know. We're really innovating here. I hope nobody finds out about this and does it first. And then, of course, Zack will be releasing his director's cut afterwards, so that should be a lot of fun. But no guests. Z-Man. And then, coming back in the new year, if you are only here for the guests, we are going to have somebody else that I'm forgetting about, but January 2nd, we're going to have John Ridley is going to be on the show, so that should be big.
And Cliff Bleszinski.
There you go, to talk about Scrapper, one of our favorite recent books. We're coming back strong in the new year. Going out weak, coming back strong. That's what I like to say. Comic Book Club News, our daily comic book news show, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Also, you can support us at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Saturdays and Sundays don't count. Subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com. this podcast and many more. And if you enjoyed this theme song, check out Girls 5 Eva next year on Netflix.
Yeah, ooh, wow.
Alex had mic problems. He's really been struggling this whole show.
Oh, what a disaster.